Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Well, thank you once again. And I have to thank my producer for setting up and creating that theme song for me. Also, I want to thank Masonic Temple for allowing me, and of course, courtesy of them, to utilize their song Blind from their new album Follow Me, which, of course, you can catch it on, and you definitely should catch it, at their MySpace account, /MASTEM. And, God, it is a glorious day today, I just got to say. I mean, well, here in Vegas it is. It's nice and sunny. But I think every day is glorious, whatever situation. And I think sometimes everything has its perfect timing and perfect situation. Specifically when, you know, people understand, you know, the economic times. Sometimes those are meant for certain reasons to maybe look at the moments and what things are really mostly important. I do want to reiterate, I do now have a Twitter account. I know I have said that in past shows. Just to reiterate, it is at FlyingPigs26, so you can always follow me or I follow you, or both. And, of course, you can always contact me through my email if you have any questions, comments, or whatever. I always have an open mind. And, of course, that's at FlyingPigs@ArtLover.com. And you can always contact me or connect to me at MySpace account at MySpace.com, Andrew Fetter. Now, I have a very, very, very special guest that's coming on. But before I do, there is an ancient prayer that was said, I guess, several hundred years ago. So, I'll just say it. It goes like this. I dance inside a circle of men and women, and they say, long life inside a circle is made, they say. Inside our circle dances the great spirit among us, they say. Having to prepare, he walks, friends, they say. He walks back to Jerusalem where the first tribe call home. Now, you might think that is perhaps from a satyr, something from the Bible, something that has to do with Judaism or with Jews, but you might be surprised. And with that, which will be explained, I actually feel very honored to have, once again, he was on my show back last year. He is a Native American of Cherokee, and he's also an elder amongst one of the Apache tribes. And I welcome you, Magid Ben Yosef. How are you doing?
Thank you, Andrew. It's a real pleasure to be on your show again, and I'm doing well today. And I should mention that prayer is an ancient Apache prayer that was given to me by an Apache elder whose name is Jay Lone Wolf, who was from the Apache who went on reservation with Geronimo down in Florida.
That would be sort of surprising. See, so most people would think, like I said in the beginning, if you just read it in the beginning, you would think that was something from the end of the Seder next year in Jerusalem or something from amongst Jews. And now it's fascinating to find this information, which comes into being, which I don't want to get into too much of your background and whatnot, because anybody can read that on your posting, and also I've listed both on both sites on BBS Radio. But, the million-dollar question, people have had thought and question. I know there's been, whether through whatever spiritual dynamics, particularly mainly amongst the Mormons, have questioned, and others thought of perhaps some of the Native Americans may have been one of the lost tribes of Israel. And I'm talking, of course, the House of Joseph, because when people understand Jew means from Judea, but means also from the tribe of Judah, and hence the name Joes, which you often refer to, which is the missing tribes of Israel, which was displaced after Assyria conquered northern part of Israel, which at that time was in was split, in fact, several hundreds of years ago. So can you tell me how is it that, the Native Americans in your respect, and let's get more specific from what you had explained before in my past show, to reiterate, that there is now physical evidence of southwestern Native Americans, amongst them Hopis and southern Arapaho and Apache. You were referring that there is some physical evidence that shows how the connection that they truly are one of the lost tribes of Israel. And I don't like to use the word lost. I'd rather say now, because we found them, I think. So can you elaborate on that?
Well, our latest DNA evidence has located what is known as the X haplograph among the Algonquin language group of Native Americans. And this comprises a great number of tribes who would make up the eastern band, who settled around and south of the Great Lakes and down well into the Mississippi River Valley. And traditionally, we believe that the Native American root stock has come from across the Bering Strait from Asian stock. But this evidence is showing that that may not be the case, that instead they have an origin from the Middle East. And this X haplograph, by the way, this research is quoted from the American Journal of Physical Anthropology and from the American Journal of Human Genetics. It's dated to around 2002, was published in 2003. And this X haplograph, which identifies the Algonquin language group as comprising about 26% of this X haplograph group around the world.
Now, the X haplograph that you're talking about, that, now, what I understand is has the same chromosome, and we were speaking about, I guess, is that the Y, they call it the Cohen Y chromosome, that is amongst priests of Jewish priests of the Cohen?
This is something different, Andrew.
Oh, okay.
This X haplograph simply is traced from mitochondrial DNA, and it identifies Native Americans as having DNA closest to the people known as the Druze, who populate Syria and part of Lebanon and Israel today. In other words, their haplograph lines up more closely with people from the Middle East. And if I can read off a list of these Native American groups who have this X haplograph, I think it would be valuable for any natives who might be listening. And simply the X haplograph among the Algonquin language group is the Abenaki, the Arapaho, the Atikamekw, the Blackfeet, the Cheyenne, the Cree, the Gros Ventre, the Illini, the Kickapoo, the Lenni Lenape, the Delaware, the Lumbee, who are also called the Croatan, the Mohicans, including the Mohicans and the Wapingers, the Maliseets, the Menominees, the Sac and Fox, the Miami, the Métis, the Bichif, the Mi'kmaq, the Mohegans, including the Pueblos, the Montauk, the Niantic, and the Chinnacock, the Montagne, the Innu, the Munsee, the Nanticoke, the Narragansett, the Naskapi, the Ojibwa, Chippewa, the Ottawa, Passamaquoddy, the Penobscot, Potawatomi, the Powhatans, the Shawnee, the Wampanoag, including the Massachusetts, the Natick, and the Mashpee, the Wiyot, and finally the Yurok.
That sounds like almost all Native Americans.
Everyone who lived around the Great Lakes area and south into the Mississippi River Valley.
Wow.
And, the reason this is exciting research is because, for several reasons, actually, but this identity with this X haplograph, which is closely connected to the Druze, places these Native Americans, at least, as having some kind of DNA origin in the land of Israel. Now, we also have a haplograph that's been located primarily in the Four Corners area. This is called the B haplograph. The Native American haplographs have been divided into A, B, C, and D. And the B haplograph comprises a group of Native Americans who are indigenous to the Four Corners area. Within this haplograph, we're finding a surprising incident of Native Americans with the extra Y chromosome, especially on the eastern half of this area. And these tribes would be the Ute primarily, but also the Navajo, the Zuni, the Hopi, and a great number of Apache here in southern Colorado. And this extra Y chromosome identifies the descendants, the male descendants of the Kohanim, of the priest, of Hebrew priests. And there's quite an interesting story about how all this came about, if we have time for it, but I'm not sure we do.
Well, we'll tail that on, and we'll see if we have time for that, but it sounds interesting. And so that the Y chromosome that you're talking about is the priest connection. And by the way, when you're talking of the Druze are, they believe they're from the, what they call from, Yethro, which is, Jethro. That's
exactly
their lineage, which are, Mennonites, but they are also, a lot of them, had actually converted to become, and became part of, Israel when, you know, they went over there or whatever. And, you know, there's the famous battle, of course, but, there was a huge conversion of them, when they, you know, went into the Sinai. But, I mean, Tzipora was a Mennonite, which is the linkage of the Druze, and it's real interesting, you say, because the Druze are very much, have very similar holidays amongst the Jews, and that's pretty fascinating. So there is a definite, as far as DNA evidence, as far as, in particular with both the Hopis and the Apaches and several having that Cohen link. How do the Native Americans, when you are, who find themselves having that linkage, what is their response for that?
Most of them are quite amazed. They had no idea that they might be direct descendants of Aaron. And, of course, the way this extra Y chromosome is believed to have come about, and this has been determined from taking population samples of people who are known Kohanim, people who are known descendants of Aaron, to identify this extra Y chromosome. It's believed to have taken place whenever Aaron went into the holy place, or the most holy place, had direct contact with the glory of God that somehow changed his genetic makeup, and his descendants continue to have this extra Y chromosome. But anyway, the extra Y chromosome occurring in Native American populations is quite a phenomenon down here in southern Colorado and also in northern New Mexico. The latest research has shown that this extra Y chromosome is showing up in population samples 24 to 30 times greater, an incidence 24 to 30 times greater than any known population sample anywhere in the world, including totally Jewish population samples. So what we have here in southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, the eastern half of this Four Corners area, and again, the Hopi are a lot more reluctant to be tested for their DNA. So we don't have conclusive results from the Hopi and some of the other tribes in this region, but from the eastern half, we have pretty conclusive results that there's a very high incidence of this Kohane haplography showing up among these Native American populations. And what does this mean is the question. Well, there's a prophecy, Andrew, in the last days that the sons of Zadok will somehow be found or revived or whatever, and they'll be charged with the responsibility to decide in matters of controversy and to teach the people the difference between what is clean and unclean and holy and common. This is the same commission that Moses was given, and it should help us call to mind in the last days the Torah.
And what you're referring to is, and so people would know, that's in Ezekiel 44.
Right.
Which establishes that which is interesting because that's actually the successor of the beginning, which is another issue too. I was going to want to get into, but it's funny that you jumped into the Sadok because I remember there's a very vivid thing about the priest because there was priests that took over during a certain time and they were considered straight or whatever, corrupt. And this was, it was obvious even during the Roman period. And that the ones that were, I guess it was separated because, you know, a lot of the Kohanim were dispersed amongst, after the split of Israel because there was a big fight over that. But, a lot of them were gone. So that would correlate to that and then correlate to what you're talking about. But anyway, down the line, just check that out. It's in Ezekiel 44. And of course, people have heard him on my past shows. He's the guy, by the way, who saw the spaceship in the very beginning of his prophecies. And there's a lot of questions about what happened with that. But there's another thing which I want to elaborate. I mean, he's going into prophecy here, but is about the two sticks of both Judah and Joe, the house of Joe, which and people have to realize. That I think and they should understand, this is like when they say it's not the Jewish people, it's the people of Israel, and the people of Israel comprises of both houses, of Jews and Jews. So you really couldn't correctly say it would be a Jewish state, which should be said, you couldn't say that, you'd say the Jewish and Jewish state, if I can say Jewish. I don't even know how you can say an adjective with that, but it sounds different, but I guess that would be more correct. But people, if you have anybody, all the listeners out there, do check out from about, I believe it's like in Ezekiel 37 and back, all the way up, and you can see how a lot of the stuff that's happening is actually happening. In particular, before that, I think it was the 35, that it talks about the dry bones and how the Jews were all killed in Europe and how the birth of the native Israel, but then it goes into about how the house of Joe, which you had referred to in the past, which I want to get into, how both join hands, that's the two sticks, both of Judah and Joe, and it's when Joe has discovered who they are, which is now almost like fruition. It's sort of bizarre because like we're right now living within prophecy, but I know people out there go, oh, come on, I don't believe it, but hey, you know what? You know, sometimes some things are written on the wall for a reason, and there is perfect timing for certain situations. So, but I want to get into the aspects because people question whether, you know, we know the physical evidence of what you talked about amongst the Southwestern Native Americans, such as the Hopis. But what would be, you would think that if they had emigrated here, and since they were so in tune to consistently keep, you know, from father to son, mother to daughter, and so on, their spiritual beliefs, what is their spiritual beliefs? Because I know amongst Native Americans, which is pretty fascinating, is they have especially amongst Kabbalistical and the under core of what Judaism, almost identical way of looking at things. So, but can you elaborate on their spiritual beliefs and how they akin to Jews?
Okay, I'll try to answer that. First of all, you should understand something about the Hopi, that they are very actively a peace activist. They eschew all forms of violence and war. And this is in their ancient prophecy that there were seven cities of the Hopi, or seven clans of the Hopi, I should say, who laid down their weapons of war and declared a vow of peace. And this is how they got the name Hopi, according to Dr. Frank Waters, who lived among the Hopi and was the first person allowed to write about their beliefs and their ceremonies in his now infamous, or I shouldn't say infamous, but his now a book I recommend called The Book of Hopi by Dr. Frank Waters, which was written in 1976, to lay it all out concerning their beliefs and ceremonies. But it wouldn't be appropriate, Andrew, for me to comment on things this holy, except to say that some of the beliefs of the Hopi in ancient times. At least there's these recordings of the oral traditions of the Jews and the Talmud line up with a few things that the Hopi believe. And first of all, that's their fascination with the Pleiades, which is in Hebrew known as the Kima. And the Pleiades are mentioned 14 times in the Mishnah, in the Talmud, in connection with the flood of Noah, how the flood of Noah was actually called. It says in the Talmud that God caused the flood of Noah by removing two stars from their position from this star cluster known as the Kima, or the Pleiades. And the Hopi have a fascination with the Pleiades, especially in the night sky. They actually, you might be interested in knowing this, but it's actually referred to as a chariot that crosses the sky on the same plane as the sun crosses during the daytime from east to west during a certain time of the year when they have the ceremony. And it coincides with the time that the biblical flood is recorded in the Torah. Also had an interesting experience when I met with the three daughters of the late chief, Mike Lanza. I was contacted by the witness and wife of the Cherokee Nation, who just showed up at my house when I came back from Israel. Showed up at my house one day. I've been on a radio program with Will Bluewater, who has a program called Prophecy Keepers. And it's right there. Used to be there on BBS Radio as well. And Will's the person who designated me to be a special messenger for the Native American White Roots of Peace Council, by the way, which is to promote the twin fires, the so-called prophecy of the Hopi and the Cherokee, and also the great law of the Iroquois. And so that's kind of my active authority under which I'm speaking. Also, if I could, real quick, I'd like to recognize my mentor in Israel, the Breslau Chassid Rav Israel Zvi Yehuda Schneider, known as the Ribbon Shining Door on the Revived Jerusalem Sanhedrin. And he's the one who commissioned me to come to the United States and look for these descendants of Rachel and try to mobilize some of them who are interested to return to their inheritance in the land of Israel as an alternative to a Palestinian state in this territory. And that's really what all this is about, you know, where I'm concerned, Andrew, is, you know, there's going to be a bloodbath over there if a Palestinian state is declared in the territories of Joseph. And there's a biblical alternative to this, which I've tried to point out to our congressional leaders, to the president, to the secretary of state, but it has not met with much of a response to date. But to get back to your question about the Hopi, when I met with these daughters of the chief, they told me the same thing, that their father, before he died, had called a meeting of everyone on Third Mesa with Hotavia and Oldarabi, and there were some from Second Mesa who attended as well. And he said that when he was a young boy, just before his grandfather had died, he was sad because he loved his grandfather very much, and he was sad that he was dying. But his grandfather comforted him and said, "You'll go the same place I'm going someday. But just before it will be time for you to make your journey, it'll be time to release a very great secret to your people, that their origin, known as Tuwanasavi," Tuwanasavi is the Hopi word for the center of the universe, but the Hopi believe that it's where they came from. But Chief Mike Lanza said that the origin, or Tuwanasavi, is Jerusalem. And I've had that independently confirmed by a medicine man in Hotavia, by several independent witnesses who were present from the Second Mesa, and it was confirmed to my own ears and to the ears of an Apache elder who visited the Hopi land with me, so I wasn't the only one who heard it. And the Hopi have set aside a delegation of people to come to Israel with pottery shards. Now, I can't say very much more about that because they're still waiting on the invitation. But there were pottery shards that were given to someone by the late chief to bring to Israel. And I have personally seen these pottery shards and held them in my hand, so I know that they exist. I know that they're very ancient, and they were gathered by the late chief, Mike Lanza, who made this announcement about Tuanasavi being Jerusalem.
And so, obviously, I understand the reasoning behind keeping that disclosed of what they are and the significance of it. But what is? And you said there hasn't been a they have a delegation. They're ready to go to, I guess, as a delegation to Israel and bring those. But they have not yet, as of this time, been invited or by anybody from Israel to do that. Not even by the. Even, let's say, rabbis, for example, or other spiritual people, spiritual Jews in Israel, or even not even the government or anybody? Because that would be surprising. Why wouldn't they?
That's a good question. Why wouldn't they? I personally believe that...
let me put it this way. I could see why they might... The obvious, because... To everybody who's out there listening, if it comes to be what it is, what like you're saying, that here that delegation happens and things, you know, people are sometimes afraid of the truth, and then that opens a whole thing, and then people relate to wait, you know, that's here's the Joes and here's the Jews. Now what do you do with the Palestinians?
Exactly.
And then that becomes a question, and that's where. I know you're going to get into because there's a famous talk about from what's his name? You probably remember Abadea's a vision of the House of Esau. By the way, so everybody knows we're first of all because I live there. If you really look at the Palestinian people, now you got to split. They're separate. There is a difference. There's in the West Bank and the Northern Israel. Most of the Arabs or Palestinians do have a dialect of Syrian dialect, and they would make more common sense that they have that the House of Esau within their blood, which is Adamite, which is from Syria to I guess it would be east of the Jordan. So in that sense, that those Palestinians there are of the House of Esau. And then you have down in the south in Gaza. And by the way, I know this because I have very close friends of mine. In fact, my best friend is a Palestinian Arab, and when we used to go down to Gaza, he couldn't understand half the time what they said because he would say to me they speak with an Egyptian accent, so and he couldn't, you know, he have to focus on what they say. It'd be almost like, to an extent, I wouldn't say like the South to the someone living in the southern United States compared to somebody in New York. But it's actually worse. It's further than that because they actually use different words. But those people, I believe, are from more related to the Egyptians or from Egypt. So, but there was a famous prophet, Obadiah, and he is of the leader of their people, and he had an envision. So, on that note, what I'll let you say it. What was his recommendation?
Okay. Yes, you're correct. The prophet Obadiah. Which means simply the servant of God. Obadiah was the only prophet in the Bible who was descended from Esau. And he hid 100 prophets of God from the wicked Queen Isabel and her husband Ahab. And because he did this, he was given the gift of prophecy himself. And his prophecy comprises one small chapter in the Bible. It's the smallest book of the entire Bible. But it's a word of warning to the house of Esau that would dwell in the territories that belong to Jacob.
Do you remember where that was located in the Bible?
Yes, Obadiah or Obadiah, if it is in Hebrew. It's one of the Treasar, one of the ten... minor prophets. But in the book of Obadiah, in verse 17 and 18, it talks about the house of Joseph being the flame of a fire, the fire itself being the house of Jacob, that would burn up the house of Esau, which would be like of these possessions, they would find them occupied by the House of Esau. And so our proposal to give a Palestinian state to the Palestinians in the northern two-thirds of the so-called West Bank, the correct name is the Judea Samaria, but the northern two-thirds of this region is the birthright territories of Joseph. And by giving these territories to the Palestinians, vis-a-vis the House of Esau, according to Obadiah, our State Department is tampering with the birthright, taking the birthright from Jacob and giving it to the House of Esau. And as a Native American, I know that tampering with a birthright is the blackest road one can walk. It results in a curse. And I'm not so sure that everything that's confronting our economy today is not rooted in our policy in the Middle East because of this curse that we are bringing upon the land of Israel.
Yeah, well, and from my perspective and from my view and within Kabbalism is that for every action there is a reaction, and hence when you talk curse, I believe that like when somebody does something, it's not that God has already set in motion that when you do something negative, it reflects back towards you. You're actually creating your own curse. And that's why I think that as much spewing of hatred and violence toward Israel, Israel is almost like the, when I don't say Jews, I say the people of Israel, by the way. I mean, that needs to be consistently reestablished, because that includes the Jews and the Jews. And I wish the rabbinute out there and the rabbis recognize that fact. That is the people of Israel, Shema Yisrael. It's not Shema Yehuda. that Israel is really a reflection. So if the people of Israel, whatever's transpired toward Israel, is going to reflect back. So if there's negativity and violence, so be it. What happens is that they're going to get that right back. And it's really, when people say, like, they put a wall up there, well, the wall is a reaction. Or if they do something, it's consistently, you'll see, is a reaction to the circumstances. You know, if there's a welcoming of putting our true hand of peace, peace will come in unveiling. But peace also comes with our understanding and reflection toward mutual recognition. Now, what you have offered, which is actually pretty fascinating, is basically since the Arabs in that area chose the name, and I don't know how come why they picked the Latin name of Palestine, because they don't even have a B in their word. For them, they would have pronounced it Palestine, I guess. Literally means Philistine. And that was basically going to screw you to the Jews by the Romans. That's how that name came about. But if they chose that name and they really want to identify as a Philistine, then wouldn't it be more logical? By the way, Philistines were from Greece. But you had put in there, and I know I'm jumping a gun here, that they possibly should be outlaid a land other in the area. I think it would be like near Ashdod, Ashkelon, toward the south through Gaza, cutting partially into the Sinai, which is basically the area of the Philistines. Am I correct?
Okay. Yes. The prophet Zechariah, I call this the Zechariah plan. That's how it was introduced to Israeli officials in 2000 and 2001. But the Zechariah plan is based on Zechariah chapter 9, and it offers a biblical alternative to Palestinian state. There is a state for the Palestinians, but first of all, you have to understand that it is a conditional state. It's a state that is based upon the bloodshed being removed from the mouth of these people known as the Plishtim. And Plishtim is the same word that Yasser Arafat used to describe the Palestinians.
Yeah. And well, that's how they can't say Palestine. They say Philistine instead. You're right.
Right. So they were called Plishtim, which is, in English, the Palestinians. But
actually, more correctly, is Philistine. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, they were told that they would dwell in peace as a clan among Judah. Okay? And they would be dwelling in Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gaza, and Ekron. Now, the land that joins those cities together is called the Shephelah. It's a very fertile region
continuity with several parts and giving them opportunity for having, economics, because they'll have several parts, they'll have fertile land, they'll have, a continue, not a break. Oh, there's one piece here and one piece there. It's basically one entity. But what would happen if, let's say, the Palestinians or Arabs would say, hey, you know what, I don't want to move that over there. I like living here, you know, in Shechem or Nablus or Ramallah or whatever. What would, in your view, what would that be? And they want to live in peace, let's say. Hey, you know what? Before in the 80s, I'll just tell you straight up, before 89, when the Jordanians yanked their citizenship, and that's when all the hell broke loose, they were actually living really quite well off, actually better than average Americans. I know this for a fact, especially in areas of Tokaram. And they actually wanted to become like amongst Israelis. What would you think if they decided, they said, hey, you know, I want to stay in Tokaram, I want to stay in Jenin or whatever. And by the way, Jenin's not a refugee camp. That would be called like calling Las Vegas a refugee camp, okay? It's a big-ass city, okay? But go ahead. What would you say to that, though?
Well, my first assignment in Israel was in 1987. I was a missionary in an all-Muslim village in East Jerusalem called Bet Faji. And I made a number of friends among the Palestinians. And this is something we talked about at length. Before the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, became the dominant political power among the Palestinian people, the Palestinians of East Jerusalem set their clocks to Jordanian time. And they had pictures of King Hussein of Jordan on their walls. They were a peaceful people for the most part. It's been the incitement that has been caused by the PLO, and to some extent the inequities in services that were provided for the Palestinians.
Well, there was just general theft. I mean, there's, if you don't know, there's billions of dollars. Actually, more money has been given to the Palestinians than any people in the world per capita. And then Arafat, when he died, by the way, he's not even a Palestinian, or wasn't born or raised in Israel at all. But he ended up being one of the top richest people in the world when he died, and he didn't even bring his wife and kids to, you know, live there. But, and I think that was part of the big mistake. You know, people ask me, well, what are the settlements of mistake? I think personally the mistake was when Rabin reached out to Arafat, because that was a big mistake. And I think the best course, and I think we talked about before in a prior show, that was some sort of joint control between the Jordanians at the time with the Israelis in that area, because that would just sort of put things into... and since Jordan, by the way, is a Palestinian state, it's run by Hashemites who are from... The Hashemites are like the Saudi family. There are two families that ran in Arabia, and the deal was with Lawrence of Arabia, hey, I'll give you this land. And the Saudis took... the Saudi family took the Arabia, and hence that, of course, you know who got screwed out of that one. The Saudis got all the oil.
If I can continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the word that the Spirit had me speak to these Palestinians, mostly young men in their early teens, and late teens, early 20s, was simply that God was bringing home the children of Israel to their possession, and that if they did not resist this, it would go well with them. But if they did resist it, it would be like spitting against the wind. And I believe there are Palestinians who are friendly to of the Israelis, who recognize Israel's right to exist and who want peace. But the problem is these conditions that the God of Israel has placed on this Palestinian state. First of all, the bloodshed must be removed from between the teeth, and the abominations from between the mouth. And what this means for someone who's covered this Palestinian uprising from its beginning in 1987 as a member of the Israeli media, I did work with Middle East Television and with the Jerusalem Post when I was in Israel. That's how I supported myself. But as someone who's covered this from the beginning, if you'd asked me what are these conditions, I'd say, well, that means the violence has got to end, the terrorism has got to end. And the language that has remained in the Palestine Charter, PNC, they call it, the Palestine National Charter, still calls for the death of all Israelis.
Or all Jews, yeah. The removal of all Jews from Israel.
There must be a recognition of Israel's right to exist in this Palestine National Charter. And the third condition placed by the God of Israel is that the pride of these people known as the Plishtim must be broken. Now, here is where I believe our State Department has made a very big blunder, because we have continually lifted up hope to the Palestinian people for a Palestinian state in the territories that belong to Joseph and Judah.
Not to interrupt you, but so that people understand that even today, there's the burial sites of both Rachel and Joseph are in the Samaria region, and that's for a reason. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I just wanted to conclude by saying this, that the God's vision of Zion is bigger than a purely Jewish state. It also must accommodate the return of the house of Joseph. And this represents unfinished business with the God of Israel, that there's these enmities and vexations that have gone on for more than 3,500 years, which resulted in separate exiles, and the breaking up of the kingdom of Israel into the northern tribes and the southern tribes, a civil war, alliances made by the northern tribes with the enemies of the southern tribes, and eventually separate exiles of these two families. There's never been a reconciliation of this. And I believe the landmass which the God of Israel is choosing to bring about this reconciliation is Judea Samaria. And so
wouldn't be the reconciliation be that welcoming of if the Hopis being a part of that, you could say, of the Jews coming to Israel, wouldn't that be the first step to a reaffirming of a reconciliation between both the house of Judah and the house of Joseph?
That's exactly what I'm getting at, is that for there to be a reconciliation and a reunion and a restoration, the house of Joseph must return to their possession. The Rachel, in Jeremiah 31, is heard weeping many centuries after her death. She's heard weeping by the prophet Jeremiah. And God comforts her weeping and says that her children, the children of Rachel, will return to their own possession. Unfortunately, the Palestinians are currently living in these possessions. They have to be relocated to their biblical Palestinian state, which we've already talked about, and then the return of the house of Joseph can proceed in a way that will not cause more strife and more war and violence.
And what if they just chose, the Palestinians chose to stay where they are as put, and then said, okay, you know, well, we'll stay here, but you can bring the Jews over to Israel. Well, what you, I mean, what would be, would that still be, I mean, what was your view upon that then?
There's a provision for this. It's in the Talmud. It's referred to as the seven laws of Noah, where anyone who is a resident in the land who will agree to abide by the seven laws of Noah so that they don't defile the land would be allowed to stay there. Of course, one of the seven laws of Noah is that there's a prohibition against killing and murder. And so, you know, this is something that would have to change in the Hamas-ruled philosophy of the Palestinian people in currently living in the birthright territories of Joseph.
All right, Hamas, I don't want to get into that, because that's like talking to Islamic fascists, whatever, and to recognize the fact that they don't even, I mean, the God of Israel is the same God of Allah, and same God of Jesus, same God of Tao, and anyway, it's sort of like stupid to hate and preach to kill somebody that's part of Allah, because then you really, in fact, don't love God, Allah. But that's a whole. I've given that dialogue in one of my past shows, But so let me get back to now with the Hopis, and they, and so what is, so there has any of the rabbis or any of the rabbinut that you've ever talked to or out, we, I'm really surprised that even the Hasids, I'm sure they would love it personally, just from my memory conversation with them, and I know for sure in Tzfat or any of the Kabbalistical rabbis would, you know, in discussion I know I had with you prior, I would have that in a welcoming arm as their delegation. But have you heard or discussed or heard any information about their opening up to them? Because I know there's been dialogue. I mean, I know there's been the government of Israel with some Native Americans. There's been a huge open dialogue amongst that.
Well,
with the Native Americans, but nothing of the course of what you said. So have you heard anything from any rabbis or anything like that of, you know, of a welcoming arm?
There is a rabbi who is now deceased. He was a Reform rabbi. His name was John Duke, and his nickname to the Hopi was Red Hat. And he made a number of inroads among the Hopi. But as I say, he's now deceased. But no, there's been no rabbis who have contacted me yet. I'd be happy to take them down to Hopi country and introduce them to the medicine people and the elders there, and so they could hear firsthand the things I'm telling you. But to date, no one from the Jewish community has contacted me about that.
Well, hopefully that'll change within a millimeter, you know, because that would be, you know, rediscovering our past, so to speak. You got to welcome your brother. So hopefully you will hear something soon, or they will hear something soon. But have you contacted, you perhaps me talk directly to some of the different religious functions or directly and try to, you know what it is? I think there is a course where they would like to do that, but a lot of people, as they say, don't want to rock the boat, so to speak. And I think that's probably the issue. And even as we're speaking, I know there's people out there going, oh my God, what would happen if, you know, you had a million Native Americans coming into the West Bank and into Samaria and Judea, or specifically the Samaria area.
I'll tell you what would happen, Andrew. You would diminish the Palestinian majority, which is ruled by Hamas, so that Israel could proceed with annexation. And
then they wouldn't have to worry about the majority anymore.
The Israeli state. And you would diffuse the politics of Hamas by doing so.
And then you can say, let's have then there is no such thing as worrying about demographics, and you won't have to worry about the Lieberman proposals and, you know, that BS, and then everybody can live where they are and or do what they want, but then recognize the fact that there is, you know, that's the problem. A lot of people, they keep on separating, you know, and I want to reiterate, because I know this, I'm getting into my spiel here, and I'd rather get yours, is that people forget, they keep on saying Jews are like a religion, but Jew is a people, and the same thing as Joe is a people, and that's what they forget. They don't understand. They try to separate, and they aren't. But last but least, I do want to, and we hit on a lot of different subjects. I know, I tried to get in to delve into some of the spiritual aspects of the Hopis, and I know you can't, and then respectfully so, I understand your respectfulness, not wanting to divulge, you know, some of their beliefs, because I understand, because everybody, you know, you ascertain them as being, you know, it's not something to put out there, and, you know, a lot of, and I understand that. But what other correlations under the spirituality amongst the Native Americans, since you live amongst, especially amongst the Apaches, because you had brought up, I mean, a chant one time told me, and I was like, wow, that sounds like the Abu Lafi. In fact, it is exactly the Abu Lafi chant, which is using one of God's names, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, which I disclosed in a past show, which I personally utilize. But what are the correlations, like spiritual correlations that they use that you can feel freely to correlate? Because I think we've done with the physical. There's obviously a physical. There's obviously a cultural aspect. What is about their spiritual aspects that you find a deep correlation?
Well, Let me try to answer that by simply stating that I believe there is a spiritual connection with the Jews and Israel, and I believe that it is related to their covenant.
No, I'm talking about with the Native American spirituality.
Talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about those between, because there I see a real deep correlation. I'm trying to get to the spiritual beliefs, the way they... The fundamentals, I know you bring up Talmud, which is really strange because Talmud was written in Babylon, and that was during the time after actually the split in the tribes that split, which is really bizarre. But oral law, people don't forget, which I hate to say because some Talmud I think is a lot of BS. Okay, straight put, because I have a lot of my own views about rabbinical ideology, what they've done within Judaism. But,
Lincoln.
But it's interesting that you had said that because that was written, or while it was passed down, mouth to mouth to mouth. And of course, some of it was changed, transpired, but it's interesting that certain dynamics of it, which you refer to in the stars and stuff, which is consistently utilized. In fact, when you say that when it's Saturday night, when it's the closing of a day, because they start their day start at night and then close at day in amongst Jews, that they look upon the three stars, which is funny that you had also referred to how the Hopis look onto the certain element of certain stars, which is similar within the Talmud. But what are the other dynamics that you find a correlation between, whether it's the Hopis or Apaches? That's what I'm getting at before we have to wrap this thing up.
Okay, let me repeat again. The link relates to their covenant with the Yod and the He and the Vav and the He, with the divine name. And you hear this in the chants, especially among the Lakota tradition, where they'll sing the songs and then they'll go into these chants using the syllables of the Y and the H and the W. And I believe that, there was 120 Native Americans who went to Israel. This has been about 10 years ago. They called it 120 drums. And they brought these drums all over the land of Israel, interceding there. When they came to the Western Wall, they had a father drum set up there with natives around the father drum, singing and chanting. And there were Jews who came up to them and said, "You're singing our songs." Well, what they were referring to was the chants, which are permutations of the divine name. As you know, this is a mystical device to permute the letters of the divine name. Well, this happens naturally in the chants of the Native American people. There's one chant in particular that has interested me, which is called the Chinupa song. The Chinupa is the sacred pipe. And in this Chinupa song, there are two stanzas of 13 syllables in which the Y and the H and the W sounds are permuted. And there's a belief by the mystic sages that there is a divine name of 26 letters that is still not known exactly where it is. Wouldn't it be interesting if it would be hidden among these Native American chants? But what we have to remember, Andrew, is that the covenant, if these Hopi are descended from Israel, from the house of Joseph, their covenant with the Great Spirit was never abrogated. If they can trace their history according to these beliefs that are found in these plates, which later became the Book of Mormon. Now, I'm not advocating the Book of Mormon. I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying that Native American history and prophecy lines up with much of the Book of Mormon. If this is the case, then these Native Americans would have descended from a man named Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef, who was from a family of Joseph that remained in covenant with the God of Israel after the exile of the northern tribes. This would mean that if the natives came from this family, their covenant's never been abrogated. Their sweat lodges, their sun dances, all of their ceremonies are of the Great Spirit, of the correct spirit. And I think it's important for non-natives to recognize that, especially as we're coming into a time where Native American spiritual sovereignty is being restored to this land in connection with Hopi prophecy. Hopi were told that they were told the same thing Abraham was told. You walk the length and the breadth of this land, and everywhere you stake out is yours for a possession. And now we have these Hopi descendants coming up from the south. A medicine man at Third Mesa in Hotavia told me that the Aztec people were one of the clans of the Hopi, but instead of returning from their migrations, as their ruling prince had told them, they remained in Central America and set up their own civilization. Well, these are the descendants of these Aztecs are the ones who are now flooding across our borders, and this is perfectly in accord with Hopi prophecy, and the spiritual sovereignty of this land is reverting to these descendants of the Hopi. And I think that falls in line with the prophecies about the sons of Zadok, who will eventually rule in matters of controversy and teach people the difference between what is clean and unclean, holy and common.
Wow. Well, I just think everything has its perfect timing. Speaking of timing, and I just want to really, really thank you for coming back on my show to elaborate and explain in specifics the dynamics and the connections of the House of Joes and the Native Americans and what needs to be done, and hopefully in God's will and with the universe, that will transpire sooner than later. And if somebody out there wants to contact you or check your site out, could you how would they be able to contact you? If there are even rabbis out there, or even Palestinians or Arabs or anybody out there who has questions, you know, they want to contact you and you know, or Native Americans, how would they be able to contact you?
Well, my website is www.torah-voice.org. And there's an address and a phone number there that people can contact me by mail at P.O. Box 252 in Walsenburg, Walsenburg, Colorado. That's zip code 81089. That's Walsenburg, Colorado, 81089, P.O. Box 252. And my telephone number is also there on my website. I'm fairly easy to locate. I'm just now starting to do more speaking. I've been going through a period of mourning from the loss of my father for the last couple of years, and I'm just now starting to do some speaking again. And I'm particularly interested in trying to reach people who have contacts with the Congress, with the Secretary of State, and with President Barack Obama, because we need to understand that our foreign policy in Israel is bringing a curse on this nation, and it needs to be redirected according to where the Bible says the Palestinian state should be. Thank you, Andrew, for allowing me to be a guest.
And thank you for coming on my show. And I want to thank all my listeners out there and future listeners. If you've missed or you want to recheck this information out again on this particular interview, it will probably be up hopefully in the archives no later than on Monday. Do just check periodically. And anything you want to reestablish, there's contact information directly to me if you have any questions directly. And with that, I will close with Pipe Dream, which is a great song by Denise Vasquez. And you please do check her site out, denisevasquez.com. That's from her latest album, Frame of Mind. And with that, God bless you, and thank you all for listening.
People smell the roses, look at the sights, your party's right there. Your helipipe, your clouds, your light, you breathe the smoke screen. Put down the pipe, check into life, drowning in your pipe dream. People see right now.